Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to the last 25 minutes of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We have this show available on podcast form, so if you miss the show, Today's Issues, and you want to listen, go to AFR.net and click on podcast. And then Today's Issues will come up. Click on there, and you can listen to the show on demand. So it's very simple, very easy to do. Listen on the internet to this show if you can't listen to it live. All right, Today's Issue is the name of the program. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano and Fred Jackson. And now Steve Paisley-Jordahl.
Good morning.
Is in studio. Good morning, Steve.
How you doing?
Doing well yourself?
I'm well.
You're doing your Christmas choir this year?
We've already done a concert Thursday and a concert a week ago Sunday. So
now what choir are you in now?
It's a choral group. Not a choir now. Church has a choir.
What's the difference?
Columbus Choral Society. Well, we tend to sing more classical, difficult music as opposed to, like,
I'm just going to be honest. This sounds kind of like an uppity kind of attitude towards choirs. We're not a church choir.
A little bit.
We're a choral
a little bit.
Group.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, Ed, in sports, there's major leagues and there are minor leagues.
No, that's true. But there's no question about which group is which. What I'm saying is there may be some church choirs.
If you listen to the church choir and you listen to this choral group, you're going to know the difference.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I think that's what Steve is saying without saying it, because we don't want to hurt his feelings.
Okay, since you want to defend the choral group, would you go listen to a choral group?
I would listen to
the classical music?
I like that in small doses. I'm not a big listen to a 2-hour concert choral guy, but I
had such a good concert. Oh my gosh.
All right, what'd y'all sing? Tell me your lineup of songs.
All right. So we had a thing called Psalm 150. It's
Psalm 150. I ate some bad chicken once and
can I do this? Can I hold off on that? I don't have a program in front of me, and there's a lot of songs.
Sure, bring it. Why don't you bring a clip?
I'll bring a clip Monday.
Bring a clip. I'll play a clip from your concert.
I'd love to do that.
That's when Tim and Ed won't be here.
Oh, that's right. We're off Monday.
Are you really?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, we'll still have Christmas in front of us when we get back from Thanksgiving Day.
It wasn't necessarily Christmas themed, but it was our fall concert.
Okay.
And it really went well.
Do you have a Christmas concert planned?
No, okay. That's it. We have two a year.
Okay.
So you celebrated fall?
We didn't. We sang. We sang about.
About what?
About.
About fall.
About fall.
about leaves falling and pumpkins.
The great pumpkin.
Well, one of them was Psalm 150.
Psalm 150.
Oh, Psalm 150.
Psalm 150.
I thought you said Salma.
Salmo. Well, the title is Salmo 150. It's in Spanish. It's in Latin, but.
I think they sang the classical version, You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog.
Y'all mock if you want, but man.
Let me ask you this.
Fall, yes, sir. Mississippi.
You have to try out for this?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, whatever you were driving at, Tim, I think that was answered.
That's your difference.
That's one
right
of the differences.
That's your difference right there. You had a big difference.
Yes, yeah. It is.
You got to try out for this choral group.
Yeah.
Church choir, they'll take anybody.
Just about take anybody.
Having been on both ends of that equation, I can assure you there's a difference.
And, of course, for all the Andy Griffith fans, there's a great episode with Barney Fife being the one person who couldn't sing in the choir.
Right.
Anyway, I don't want to go down that road. But
yeah, how'd they get him out of there?
Well, they gave him a microphone, and they told him that it was a special microphone. And if he had to sing so low that the rest of the people couldn't hear him. And then they had a guy behind the curtain that sang. It's a great episode because Barney
Because Jim Nabors could sing.
I don't remember if it was Jim, if it was the Jim Nabors character or if it was the Rafe Hollister. I can't remember. Anyway, but it was so funny because Barney was basically mouthing the words, and you heard this big booming voice,
right.
And Barney's eyes get wide, and he just starts to gesture like it's him doing it.
That's funny.
It was a funny episode.
All right, Steve.
All right.
Yeah, bring us down. Pop the bubble.
No, I want to give some kudos out to our new House Speaker, Mike Johnson, who is taking a little bit of heat because he's a real Christian. He's a believer, and he means it. So there's a couple things I want to do. I want to read you something from Jonathan Turley. I read you guys this in our story meeting this morning, and then I want to play you a clip. Jonathan Turley, who he admits he likely does not share Johnson's views on legislating morality, as he says, or separation of church and state, but he has always found Johnson to be an honest man. This is what he wrote. Many were aghast that Johnson used his first speech as speaker to thank God and to say that he believes that God has a plan for him, that this is a view shared by millions of religious Americans, and it's not the first time a politician has made such a public expression of devotion. Bill Clinton used to invoke God and salvation continually as he set physical records for debauchery. Even after his Monica Lewinsky scandal, Clinton would rally liberals to politics and political involvement dictated by faith. The problem with Johnson is that he actually seems to mean it. Hmm. Mike Johnson, I'm getting my voice here. Mike Johnson was on CNBC, and the host of CNBC. I'll take that. Thank you. Just hand me a cough drop. The host at CNBC was kind of incredulous about this whole thing, too. Let's listen to Cut 11.
I think it was the first day that you had been sworn in. It appeared that you were praying on the floor of Congress with a number of other congressmen. And there is a question about the separation of church and state. We often talk on this show about about whether religion should play a role inside a company, whether people should be allowed to pray inside a company. It's one thing to pray outside and to have your faith, and there's a great importance in that. But how do you think about that, and how do you think about the public perception of that?
The separation of church and state is a misnomer. People misunderstand it. Of course, it comes from a phrase that was in a letter that Jefferson wrote. It's not in the Constitution. And what he was explaining is they did not want the government to encroach upon the church, not that they didn't want principles of faith to have influence on our public life. It's exactly the opposite. Washington said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And John Adams came next, and he said, our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate with government of any other. They knew that it would be important to maintain our system. And that's why I think we need more of that. Not an establishment of any national religion, but we need everybody's vibrant expression of faith.
I think I'm listening to Stephen McDowell or David Barton.
Yeah.
Because he was exactly accurate in everything he just said. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, the mainstream media imploded, of course. They couldn't.
They're still doing it today.
I mean, that anchor displayed his ignorance.
Right.
You know, the separation of church and state, the left says, yeah, it's in the Constitution. Well, you know, Johnson said, no, it's not.
Right. One headline said, technically, Johnson is correct. It's not in the Constitution, but.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and the part of the reason why, and I almost feel bad for people like this. Like this anchor, because they have been raised to believe that separation of church and state is in the Constitution, or at the very least, because it was cited by the Supreme Court. And I don't remember if this was the 1947 ruling or the 1963 ruling, 61, or any of those. But they cited the phrase separation of church and state. The Supreme Court is the one who misused Jefferson's phrase and cited separation of church and state as erecting a wall against religion's influence in terms of the government, when, as Speaker Johnson correctly says, Johnson meant it in exactly the opposite way, because it was written to the Danbury Baptist Association in Connecticut, if I'm not mistaken. They were worried that their faith would be restricted because they were not a part of the established church in Connecticut. Jefferson said, no, there is a wall protecting you,
protecting
from
you.
The government.
Right. Yeah, and that's the context. You know, one of the bigger issues here is the heathens in our society, they want the right to put their worldview into statutes. They want their the right to put their worldview into law. But a Christian comes along, like Mike Johnson, and says, I believe in Jesus Christ as my personal Savior. He said in that initial speech from the floor of the House that he said, I think we're all here by God's design. He looked around,
right.
Democrats, Republicans, we're all here by God's design. I believe in that kind of God. But they don't want his point of view to dictate anything into law.
Right.
Of course, he doesn't want to impose a theocracy
right.
on America. He was very clear about that. But he does want to for Christians to have the freedom to express their viewpoint and not be demonized.
You don't check your faith at the door. Yes. One other thing about Mike Johnson that I think is impressive. You know, we've been talking about Hunter Biden and the millions that he's brought in, and Joe Biden, how did he get all those luxury homes? And today the House is going to be voting on expelling a member, George Santos, a Republican, who is accused of using bunches of campaign funds for luxury items and stuff. Mike Johnson is reported lives paycheck to paycheck. Mike Johnson does not have a retirement savings. He doesn't own a single stock, doesn't have assets at all. He has less than $5,000 in his bank account. He's got a somewhere between $250,000 and $500,000 mortgage, a home equity loan, and a personal loan.
And he was initially mocked
yeah.
For not having money.
Could you imagine Joe Biden living in the White House and needing the White House's $200,000 a year to live?
Right.
Well,
I think he's the real deal. Yeah, he's the real deal, and I do not approve of either Republicans or Democrats using their position in Washington, D.C. in order to get rich. I don't mind them prospering if they play by the same rules as everybody else,
right.
But it seems clear from way out here – in the sticks, so to speak, way far away from Washington, D.C., that there are far too many members of the political class in D.C. using inside information, getting...
You should write a song about that.
Get
Rich Man North, Rich Man North of Richmond. I think that would be a good title for it.
Hey, I think I'll do that.
You know, I'll arrange it for my choral group.
I was going to say, I find a good choral group to do it. Anyway, so I'll get off my hobby horse here, but... Mike Johnson seems like the real deal. And Jonathan Turley, the law professor from George Washington Law School, I think,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea what his religious background is, but he at least sees the sincerity of the faith of the current speaker now.
Right. How do people know about his personal finances? Do you have to report all that?
You have to disclose.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he disclosed... I don't have any money.
Paycheck to paycheck.
Well, I think he disclosed his financial state, and
right.
and then everyone else drew the conclusion that you just drew. He lives from paycheck to paycheck.
I would just put a little box here saying donations accepted.
Yes. That's probably illegal.
Oh, okay.
So that's why some members of Congress
Well, you could put another box there just for transparency and say, we'll do favors in return for cash. What about
right.
that, Ed?
That's right.
Would that work?
Could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that's what they do anyway.
Have cash, we'll vote.
There are... That's the way of the world. I mean, you do have ethics, which, you know, is the, at least we're still supposed to have ethics in Washington.
There are rules.
Yeah, there are rules that you have to follow, which is set to prevent buying off favors
right.
from congressmen. But a lot of, but let's face it, that's why a lot of congressmen, be they Democrat or Republican, they get donations. A corporation will write a check to the Democrat campaign and to the Republican campaign, just in case whoever wins, so they can have an entree,
right,
to that congressman's or senator's office. But that's the way it's always been. I think
it's in the Bible.
And there's and there's nothing wrong with that per se. It's just that when you get in trouble is when you give personal favors, or you give somebody advantages that another person wouldn't have just because they gave money to your campaign.
Well, yeah, but you're not saying there's nothing wrong with taking money to vote a certain way.
No, I agree with that. No, I agree with that. I'm just saying that a lot of there's nothing wrong with advocating for your position,
right?
And that's why companies and even individuals. Well, let's face it, Mr. Trump, Donald Trump, former President Trump, he gave money for years to the Democrats.
Right.
He gave money to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. Why do you do that? You might say, why does somebody like Donald Trump? Because not when she ran against him.
Right.
But before that, because he would tell you, Donald Trump would tell you, when I was a businessman in New York, we gave to a lot of Democrats because we had to have favor with them.
Right.
Huh? Because I'm a New York businessman, I got to give money to Democrats.
And they run the local government.
Right. So you may disagree with that, but that's what he'll tell you, the reason for those campaign donations. So I'm just saying that's the way of the world, like it or not. Go ahead, Steve.
All right. Let's go to the Palestinian war, the Israel war. Israel's been taking a lot of heat from the world. You've seen all the pro-Palestinian protests. Because they say that the world says that they're doing a genocide, they're bombing hospitals, they're bombing schools, they're killing children. They don't have to do this. They're an evil occupation, state. So CBS has a reporter, as most networks do, in the region to cover the war, and the spokesperson for the IDF, he's a general in the IDF, took them to an active war zone, to a hospital in Gaza. And he says, we're going to go to this hospital. It's an active war zone. There was rockets and bombs and guns going off about 100 yards down the street. And so they were kind of taking their cover, but they had cleared the basement of this hospital. And they took them down into the hospital. And I want you to hear what this is CNN reporting. What the first voice you'll hear will be the general, the press liaison from the IDF. And then you'll hear the CNN report, cut 7.
We do not know that the hospital is entirely clean. We do not know. We only entered to this area which was suspected because we were being fired.
Gari leads us through a warren of basement corridors to this room.
This was the armory, okay?
This was the Hamas armory.
Yeah.
He shows us a few rusting guns and some explosives. These guns alone have potentially huge implications for Gaza's hospitals and Israel's apparent push to take control of them.
The International Committee for the Red Cross say that hospitals are given special protection under international humanitarian law in a time of war. But if militants store weapons there or use them as a base of fire, then that protection falls away.
And nearby, possible evidence, hostages could have been held here. More evidence, Hagari says, points towards Hamas and possible hostage presence below the hospital.
So what we've been told is that, and what we've seen, is that Israel is telling everybody in a particular place, we're going to bomb this building, it has Hamas leaders in it, or it's a store of weapons or whatever, we're going to bomb it. We'll give you 30 minutes to get out, get to safety, and then the building's gone.
Right.
And, but Hamas, I've seen videos of them literally shooting people trying to leave an area because Hamas is using human shields. He's using this hospital and children and women and men who are in the hospital to, and then when Israel takes out the weapons cache and happens to get some people that live that are in the hospital, that's a publicity coup for Hamas.
So what do you think about the fact that we talked about this in our story meeting? You initially brought this story to us in part because you were surprised that CNN was running this story. Why do you think CNN, which I would initially have thought would cover only the pro-Palestinian side of this war, it looks to me like they are putting some of the blame back on Hamas for some of the deaths of innocent civilians and with the military operations against hospitals. It's kind of surprising that CNN's doing something like this.
To some degree, I believe that the Hamas-Israel split has split the media as well. I mean, this does not fall among traditional political lines, Republicans and Democrats, a lot strong. In fact, wasn't it Schumer that was at the pro-Israel rally?
Right.
So I think it does cut along different lines. It is responsible journalism. Sometimes CNN mistakenly commits journalism, but
and this is how CNN came into existence.
Yes,
was that kind of reporting?
Yes, this was their forte.
Yeah. All right. What else you got?
All right. So the IRS is at it again.
At what?
The Biden IRS has launched an audit into a conservative group that has been doing research for Republicans on Biden judicial nominees. So the name of this group is the American Accountability Foundation, and they have just been notified that they are under audit from the IRS. Now, this is the group that gave Republicans some background info on nominees like Gigi Sohn, all these radical nominees. This group goes and does research and finds facts and posts and, you know, this gets all the data on these people and feeds it to the Republicans so that they have some idea of who's in front of them. And now, lo and behold, they're getting audited. And a lot of people are saying that's not a coincidence.
No. Well, let me see that. I probably know half these people. Walker's probably on this committee.
So, are you looking at that?
This goes back to Tea Party days, folks. Remember the Tea Party? Lois Lerner?
Yes, under the Obama administration. Yeah.
Under the Obama administration?
Yeah.
This is a tactic that they use. Yes.
I would just say, I agree, I would just say keep your house in order.
Right.
Too, especially if you're a conservative group, because, if the IRS comes knocking and wants to do an audit, there's nothing you can do to stop them. In fact, you should cooperate. But if you have your house in order, we've been audited many times over our existence here at AFA, but we always got a clean bill of health from the IRS. They said, hey, thanks for,
we have an outside, auditing firm who audits us, make sure that we are
compliant. We've done
compliant
that for a long time. Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah.
That's a yearly thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But to Steve's point, I mean, back to the Lois Lerner days, back during the Obama administration, a lot of these federal government agencies, you got to keep an eye on them because they're bent toward being discriminatory against conservative groups.
Yes. And I would say this, too. I certainly agree you should keep your house in order. However, I would say it's probably possible for the IRS to find something on anyone. And it can become a type of government harassment because you do have to take a lot of man hours sometimes to get all the material they're requesting. And if they are only doing it to conservative groups, that's problematic because it's a added burden on conservatives that liberal groups and quote unquote progressive groups don't have to deal with. And that's putting the thumb on the scale. So, I hope if this continues and it's not being done to liberal groups that Republicans in the House might call for an investigation.
Yep.
We're out of time, fellas.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
I'm going to go check out the nearest choral group,
see if I can join. Try out.
Yeah.
How do they tell you if you don't make it, Steve?
You either don't get a letter saying our first rehearsal is, or you get a letter saying thank you for auditioning. We wish you success in the future.
I just know when I tried out for high school, junior high and high school basketball, you had tryouts, and then they posted the names of those who made it on the door of the gym.
Yeah. Right.
And if your name ain't on there.
Well, what you do is you get
a
letter.
Church league ball.
You get a letter that says, thanks for trying out, and you might want to check out your local church choir.
Right.
Or you get a letter saying, dear choral tryout guy, are you kidding us?
Yes. Are you putting us on?
You need to take up knitting. You sure can't sing sincerely.
Right.